You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
I'm Samantha Oldfield.
And I'm Christy Landwehr, and you are listening to this special monthly NRHA episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for this Thursday, September 11th, 2025.
Good morning, horse world. In this National Reining Horse Association episode, listen in as the 2025 Run for a Million champion, Arnaud Girineau, and the Open Shootout champion, Andrea Fapani, talk about their horses, their runs, and their journeys in the sport of reining.
It's the second Thursday of the month. That means it's time to slide in to the National Reining Horse Association episode of Horses in the Morning.
So, Sam, you just got back from an amazing trip. Can you tell our listeners a little bit more about the event in Germany that is all horse?
Yes, absolutely. So Americana takes place in Friedrichshafen, Germany, and it has been there for the last 2 years, or last two runnings of it, I should say. Prior to that is in Augsburg. This event is touted as the largest Western fair in Europe. And I believe it. There were thousands of people there. It's a five-day long event that has an incredible trade show. I mean, massive trade show. And it includes an equine competition, which showcases reining, cow horse, ranch riding, and cutting events, all Western disciplines. And NRHA is fortunate that the show management has included NRHA-approved reining classes at this event. And they actually do a go-round and finals for the open and non-pro ancillary classes, with the finals taking place in the evening programs of the fair, which for NRHA is rare. We typically only have one go-round, which means one run in the ancillary classes. So it's a fun and unique event. Their arena held over 3,300 people and was completely sold out the night of the reigning open finals, which for me is just, it was an amazing, amazing atmosphere and a wonderful way to showcase our sport to thousands of folks who may not have been introduced to it previously. Our trade show booth did very well, and we captured several new members and also assisted folks who were interested in reining and finding local professionals through our website under the professionals page. So overall, really a great success for us, an incredible opportunity to grow our sport. And if you've not been previously, I recommend going at least once. It was so much fun. It happens once every other year. So the next version is in 2027, and it's slated to be held on September 1st through the 5th.
Okay, now I want to go really badly. That sounds fantastic.
It was amazing. I mean, it was just an environment that was second to none in terms of a Western fair. It was great.
Wow. Okay. So now I'm going to ask you about something else that's coming up soon. It's called the Youth World Reining Cup. Can you let our listeners know what that is and when that is taking place?
Yes, absolutely. So this event was the idea of João Marcos. He's a huge believer that the youth are the future of reining. And of course, we all stand behind that notion. And this event is called the World Youth Reining Cup. It is an event that's a one-run event. One youth from each country are invited to participate in this event, and they catch ride their horse. That means the horse is unfamiliar to them. They draw it out of a grouping of horses, and then they ride it in the show. And this year's event is slated to be held in Rome, Italy, at the incredible Elementa Ranch owned by Maria Cecilia Fiorucci. It's just a couple of weeks away, on September 22nd through the 27th. And this year, we have approximately 26 countries participating. You know, during the school year a little bit, so it's a little tough for some of them to get out of class, we'll say. But we're hoping to have a good number of countries participating, about 26, and we're super excited. It's a lot of fun, and it's a great way to see the future of reining.
It's catch riding, very similar to the draw-based system that we spoke about in an episode ago in regards to the Interscholastic Equestrian Association here in the U.S. and the Intercollegiate Horse Show Association. So I love that we do this on the world stage for the reining.
Yes, exactly. You're exactly correct. It's the same kind of system. All the horses are donated by individuals and all of their names get put in essentially a bucket and the youth draws out their horse. So they have no idea who it will be before they arrive. They have a day or two to get familiar with them because reining is a high level competition. We do want to make sure there's safety involved. So they do get a day or two to get involved with the horse, but then, yep, they have one run to participate in the competition. And it's so exciting. It's really cool.
Well, we're so excited. Talk about more international. We have our first guest on today is also going to be an international guest, but he came to the U.S. to win an amazing competition that is held here every year in Vegas that many of you might have heard of. It's called the Run for a Million. And then we're also going to be talking to our second guest who also was there and did an amazing job, but he also just competed in a show called the 100X. So for those that are listening, the NRHA owns four events. We own our 4/6 Derby presented by Markell that takes place in June in Oklahoma City. And we also own our NRHA Futurity that takes place in November and December, also in Oklahoma City. And then, of course, we own our two European events. We have the Futurity that takes place in May in Cremona, Italy currently. And in the fall, in November, we have our European Derby that takes place in Lyon, France. So it is very exciting when there, of course, are many NRHA sanctioned events all around the world that we tally up all the points for lifetime earnings and we do those types of things and keep track of everything as an association. So it's fun to be able to bring on folks who are our members and do well at all of our events, but also do well at some of these others. So very excited to have our guests on today.
Arnaud Girineau won the 2025 Run for a Million reining competition in Las Vegas, Nevada, with a score of 232 on his horse Flexing Guns in Town. Flexing Guns in Town has already built a reputation as a consistent contender with a resume that shows he's been knocking on the door of greatness for years. The 2019 Palomino Stallion, owned by Anna Maria Schefflinger, first made his mark as a finalist at the Austrian Futurity, then placed third at the Breeders' Futurity. Soon, he was a fixture on Europe's toughest stages, taking reserve at the NRHA Italian Futurity Open Level 4 and again at the IRHA Derby. His breakthrough came at the NRHA European Derby, where he captured the championship with an impressive 230 score. That momentum carried him and Girineau to the Run for a Million European qualifier at Equita Lyon, where their ride sealed the ticket that would carry them across the Atlantic and into Las Vegas history. Welcome, Arnaud. We're so happy that you are here with us today. So I have known you for several years and remember back to some of your first NRHA events. But for our folks who do not know you as well, tell us about your journey to get into the sport of reining and overall, how did you get started in reining?
So I'm riding horses since I'm 6 years old, but I did not start with reining. Like in Europe, it's not that popular that it is in the USA. So yeah, I just started as an English rider and slowly moving to the, let's say, Western kind of riding. And with my family, we all decided to go for a trail ride for a week where, yeah, they used Western saddle and was kind of fun. And then we started to just look into it more and more and more and saw that, yeah, actually it's also a sport. It's not just a different saddle to use and some different clothes to wear. It's like it's legit a sport. And we figure out that there's a barn like an hour and a half, 2 hours from my parents' house that, yeah, they give reining lessons. And that's where we've been starting. My sister and I think I was like 10 years old, something like that, 11 maybe. So that's how I started reining.
I love so much that you started with a trail ride. So Arnaud, you don't know this about me, but I teach beginners to ride horses and I have three aged geldings in the backyard. I have an Arabian, an Appaloosa, and a Paint. And I love teaching beginners and most of them come to me after having their first trail ride and then they want to learn how to, you know, actually ride and do some other things. So I find that fantastic that that is how you started.
Yeah, I think this is, it's a little bit how especially in my time when I started, not that I'm old, don't get me wrong, but when I started 25 years ago, something like that, it was the easier way to start. And I believe that a lot of people just jump into that Western saddle was way more comfortable and safer than the jumping or dressage or like the English saddle, let's say so. And I just feel better when I get to learn about it. And I understand that a lot of people went from trail riding to try to make a sport out of it.
Well, please tell our listeners a little bit more about the experience of coming from France to the United States for the Run for a Million. How did all of that come about? How did you feel on the airplane ride coming over? How did all of that feel to you?
So, well, I do live, actually. I'm from France, but I'm located in Belgium with my wife, where we rent the facilities, where we have some horses in training, both of us. And to come to the United States with a horse was a lot of paperwork involved and a lot of stress to make sure that we would not have make any mistakes into all the tests and the different rules what we have to import a stallion into a sport quarantine. This was a little bit the most tricky part. And from the moment he left on Wednesday, then we had our plane with my wife and our farrier. We flew on Friday. And then when I was on the plane, I was okay, because I knew that he was already landed. Everything was fine. So me traveling, it's okay. I sit, I watch a movie, I have a drink. Everything is fine. But for the horse, it's always a little bit different.
That's, I think that's something a lot of our U.S. competitors are, if you haven't competed internationally, is something they're not familiar with. And maybe a lot of our listeners are not as well. That for you, yes, the event was very stressful, of course, participating, but the actual stress came from just making sure the horse got there and making sure all the paperwork is filled out, making sure his flight was well, making sure all the tests came back fine, the quarantine went fine. I think a lot of folks may not be aware that when horses fly back and forth, there is a quarantine period. There's a lot of paperwork involved. They need passports, all of the things. And that is actually quite a stressful part, not just competing in the event. So considering you went through all of that there and back and then competed in the event and then, of course, took the championship home, I think that's huge. I think that's amazing.
For the people, they don't know it. In my opinion, it's way more stressful to organize all this than the horse show itself. Because the horse show, maybe our horse show are not that big than what you guys have over there. But we still go from one horse show to the next. And since we came back from Vegas, we went already to one, and I'm going away again this week, and we move again for the Belgium Futurity. So we just go from show to show, and for us, going to a show, getting a horse ready, of course, the Run for a Million is the biggest you can ever have, but to get a horse ready for a show is just getting a horse ready for a show. They just have to be as focused as you want and everything. But the preparation for all this is something we are not used to. Like, this was definitely, I think, the most stressful of all.
For sure. And I'm sure you are aware, winning this event was a huge milestone for reigning in Europe, not just a win for you and Anna personally, but also for our sport internationally. How did being at the event and your win feel?
It was an honor in a way to be a little bit representing Europe in the United States. And the win felt unreal until still maybe a week ago or something like that. It was, a dream came true, and it was really like, it did not feel real for a long time. It took us, all of us, it took us a while to realize, to say, damn, we did it. Like that's real. Like, it is not a dream.
So what is Flexing Guns in Town's barn name? What do you call him around the barn?
We do call him either way Flexi or Tinsel. It depends.
Flexi or Tinsel?
Yeah, he's allowed to have two nicknames.
I love it. Yes, he's worthy of that. Beautiful Palomino for those that have not seen any of the runs that took place. So what are some of your plans for this horse in the future? What else is Tinsel going to be doing? And then also, while you're on with us, give us some of the other horses and owners and some of the other things that are up and coming in your future.
So, yeah, Flexi is actually now, he just was started again today. So we are the 9th of September. Yeah, it's the 9th today. So he had over 3 weeks of rest where he went a lot in the pasture, enjoyed a little bit his time when grazing and enjoy the sun. So this was pretty cool, especially after those, yeah, almost 10 days in Vegas where we are pretty much locked inside. I think it was cool for him to just see the light of the sun every day and go enjoy to roll in the dirt. And now we're going to try to get ready to go back to Lyon and, you know, defend the title he earned last year. So yeah, this is our plan, to try to go to Lyon and to for the European Derby and to try to be there as good as possible.
That's awesome. I love hearing you talk about, you know, we always say our horses are our athletes. And you just mentioned that he had 3 weeks of rest, and which is so important for these horses, and that he could go out and he could roll in the dirt and graze and take the time he needed to just enjoy being a horse in between events. And I think some of our listeners, some of our folks forget, you know, they are athletes and they're competing at the highest level, but they still get to be horses on their downtime. And it's really important that that piece is in there. So I love that you mentioned that. I love that you mentioned that about them, because I think it's really important that our members know that. So Arno, how can folks find out more about you? Do you have a website, social media, if they want to follow you on your competition journey? How can they find out more about you?
Yeah, first I'm gonna come back on what you said, you know, about the fact that yeah, the horse still have to be a horse. I have a few customers and friends and colleagues that tell me, yeah, but are you not scared to turn them out and so on? They might hurt themselves. Sure, they might hurt themselves, but they might also hurt themselves when we ask them to stop for a plus one, to turn for a plus one, and to ride as hard as we can in the arena. So I think if they're allowed to hurt themselves doing their job, they are also allowed to hurt themselves having fun outside.
I love that.
And for the part that to know a little bit more about us on social media, Facebook and Instagram. But I have to be honest, my wife and I we are not that great about it. Like we try to be a little bit doing better, and we always keep every followers updated about the result on the show and what show we are going. But we are not half social as we should be. Like we should post more, we should keep the people more updated, entertaining. It's just that, yeah, when you have, in a way, you have a barn to run, kid to raise, and it's still, yeah, it's the stuff which goes a little bit as last. We try to do some media and social media work, but we are not that great at it. But we know that we are not that good, so we know that we also have to improve.
Well, and I'll tell you, people can also go on the NRHA Facebook and Instagram and see everything that we just spoke about with Flexi and all that fabulous run that occurred. And there are others covering you. If you just Google your name right now and your horse's name, you're everywhere. So just keep on winning. And I think the social media world will take care of you. You'll be just fine.
I'm going to try to do that. But yeah, that was very insane. Like I think I never had my phone burning that much that after that Saturday 16 in the evening. Like this was insane. My phone went out of battery in 1 hour or something. Like
that's awesome.
I think there was one point that Sam asked about a little bit how did I feel about the European sport, a little bit about that win. I'm really happy about it, and I think it's really important in a way that, yeah, sometimes I think Europe is not enough seen into the reigning world, and I really hope that in a way that championship open some eyes into the European continent, because I think we have some great horses, some great horse trainers, some great non-pro and owners. I'm just we don't have the numbers what are in the United States, but I think the high quality horses what we have and the high quality trainer and owners are maybe competitive to be in the United States. And I think Flexi on Saturday, he showed that we also have great horses here, and I think it's really nice that it put a spotlight over Europe for a little bit, and I'm really happy about it.
100%. I think you hit the nail on the head of Europe has phenomenal horses and competitors, and they can compete on the US stage. They can compete on the worldwide stage. And you proved that on that night. The Run for Millions is a great snapshot of our highest level of competition and rating. And you proved that doesn't matter which country the horse comes from, which professional, where they come from, the owners, where they come from. That night is anyone's game, and you all definitely put the best spotlight on European reigning, in my opinion. I think it opened up everyone's eyes to how well our Europeans do. So it was an incredible opportunity for our sport and for reigning in Europe. So we were excited.
No, like I say, my phone went completely cuckoo. I think the entire scene of reigning in Europe have been calling me or texting me or my wife. So that was pretty awesome to feel that, really one continent was standing behind to just let you know that they were proud of what that horse did and what I did, and that he had to show that we also can do some cool stuff.
Thank you so much for being on the show today. It was such a pleasure to have you. And I hope I personally, unlike Sam, who's already had this opportunity, I hope I also get to meet you in person one day.
Yeah, I'm going to try to stop by the Energy Futurity this year again.
Oh, good.
We come to visit some friend normally every year, but we don't stay so long on the fairground because we are on the show all year. On the shows all year, so we try to just stop for the final, say hi to a few friends, have a drink, and then out.
Yes, I understand.
I will definitely stop in the office.
Sounds good. Thank you again.
Thank you very much for having me.
Born and raised in Italy, Andrea Fappani followed his dream of becoming one of the all-time leading trainers and reigning worldwide. His focus and his passion for excellence not only made him the youngest NRHA Million Dollar Rider, but has put him at the top of the charts as a teacher, a clinician, and an advocate of pursuing exceptional horsemanship. He has been on the Yellowstone series as well as The Last Cowboy. He is now a $9 million National Reining Horse Association rider and currently lives in Scottsdale, Arizona with his wife, Tish, who just recently reached the NRHA Million Dollar level as a non-pro. Hi, Andrea. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So please tell our listeners about how it all started. What was your very first pony ride, Andrea? How did all of this happen in your life with the horses?
Oh, as always, when I hear other people's stories, it's a long process to get where I'm at today, obviously. But it really started just like a lot of other people, just like you said, one pony ride, pretty much. It was I was 4 years old. I grew up on a dairy farm. And, at the time, my dad and my mom, they both were into horses early on. They rode a little bit, nothing professionally or nothing in competition, but they just enjoyed the animals. We obviously had a lot of animals on the farm. And I think my dad wanted to get me started with horses just to later on maybe keep me out of trouble and keep something on the farm that we could join together and enjoy together. So basically, I just got a pony and just started trail riding. My dad got himself a little bit of bigger horse, and we just trail rode for the first couple of years. Nothing like reining. It was actually on English saddles at the time. In Europe, reining wasn't as big. It was just kind of starting. But all it took was a friend of ours that was taking some reining lessons and just discovered this great sport and convinced my dad to take me to the local trainer that was doing some reining. And I was a little kid for my age. I was very shy. I was not the most aggressive. And those English horses, by this time, I was 7, 8 years old. We went on from the ponies. I went to bees, and jumping was actually kind of what we were looking at, because my dad was, as always, in everything that he did, competitive, and kind of gave me that type of, you know, attitude to everything that we did. So it wasn't anymore about just trail riding. We wanted to get serious, and the option was to either go jumping, and I took a few jumping lessons, but I was kind of intimidated by those bigger horses. They were strong. You always had to keep a lot of contact on their face, and I don't know. I enjoyed it, but it definitely was something that at some point scared me a little bit, and then I took that first reining lesson, and that changed everything. But I basically told my dad, this is what I want to do. I loved the feeling of having a horse on a loose rein to where it wasn't going anywhere unless I pushed him. And then obviously, like everybody else, is that first feeling when you say whoa and you have that slide, I'll never forget it. And it's what hooked me up 30 years ago or plus years ago, and I still enjoy today. It's just a feeling you can't describe unless you do it. And that's what I told my dad. I don't know what it is about these quarter horses, but I love their attitude. They're giving me confidence, and I love the feeling that I had. And then it basically grew from there. I stayed in Italy until I was 17, and then I moved to the States. In between that, my dad was always very open to sending me and learning. I basically spent a lot of time with a lot of trainers in Italy at that time. A lot of the guys that are here today were over there training. Tom McCutcheon, Dwayne Latimer, Dean Latimer, Jim Kaiser, Don Boyd. A lot of those guys were working for Italians that had bought horses and took them to Italy. So I had the advantage early on from when I was 13, 14, 15. I spent a lot of time with all those guys and just tried to soak it in and learn as much as I could. And then I started coming to the States on summer breaks. I went to Craig Johnson. I went to Tim McQuay. So I always had a good opportunity to go learn. And that was the main thing that my dad always told me. If you're going to do it seriously, you got to keep learning and try to become the best that you can be. And through those years, I just learned the love of the reining, but more in general of the horsemanship. And obviously I fell in love with the United States. I knew that I wanted to come here and live here early on. You know, it was a big transition from when I finished high school. I started college just to kind of keep my parents happy, because that was kind of what I was supposed to do. But I knew that my love was into horses, and pretty soon I decided to open up to my parents and tell them that I wanted to pursue this love and really see if I could make it happen. And that's when I came to the States when I was 18, and then basically never went back, just stayed here.
Wow, that's an incredible journey and story. And I love that you hit on that you spent a lot of time working with other trainers and soaking in information and dedicating your life to learning to become a more involved and better rider each day. And that's, I think some people don't realize how much dedication that actually takes and how much time that takes. So I love that you hit on that and that you started from an early age. And a lot of our folks, you know, we've known you as living in the US for a long time, but we were recently at the NRHA European Futurity in Cremona, Italy, where you took the Open Level 4 Championship on Haas, owned by Nancy Wheeler and Jimmy Nichols, with a 225.5. And that for me was a lot of fun to see you back with some of our Italians who knew you when you were first getting started in reining, and they had a great time catching up with you. And that for me was really cool to see, just as the international liaison with NRHA, because I've always known you living in the States. That experience was such a great example of the right horse in the right event. So can you tell our listeners, how do you know that a horse will do well in reining when you first start riding them, and which event to put them into?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like you mentioned, it was a great experience going back. I had not been back competing in years, and for the simple reason that the sport have come a long, long way in Europe. I think that the top riders over there, just like I think one of your guests was Arnaud, that showed exactly to everybody, to the whole world, that a top rider, doesn't matter where he's at nowadays, they can compete at the highest level and win an excellent show like the Run for the Million. So I always want to feel prepared. You know, obviously, you never plan on winning a show. You're trying to do the best that you can, but I always wanted to feel prepared. So I always told myself, if I'm ever going to go back, I want to do it kind of on my own terms. I'm not just going to borrow a horse. If it's a horse that I feel that has a shot of being very competitive, then I would love to do it. And everything kind of fell into place with the horse, between the horse, the owners, myself, the horse show and the facility. Everything just kind of fell into place. Something that you're hoping it's going to work, but definitely you never know until you do it. So it was an excellent experience. And going to your question, you know, as a I always refer myself as a horseman. Then my trade is reining, but I would like to think that hopefully I can train a horse to do anything I can set my mind to, because it's more about the language between a rider and a horse and that relationship with the horse. Then the event becomes second. So for me, when I start a colt, I have the privilege nowadays, after all these many years, that people send me horses that are exceptionally bred. So you're hoping that they have that natural talent in them to be a reiner when it goes back generations of parents and grandparents and great-grandparents that have been excellent at the sport. I would say that, you know, 75-80% of the time you come out with an individual that naturally has the talent to do it, but you still have to bring it out on him. And the challenge for me, it's always been the mind of the horse. You know, how do I get this horse to enjoy his job, to want to do his job, and not me just training it to do his job? And that becomes the challenge and what draws me to it year after year. You know, it's a cycle for us horse trainers, because, you know, you spend 2 years on a horse and you develop them, and then they become derby horses, which in our sport, they're 4 year olds and older. And then it becomes kind of a routine for them. You're training them to keep going and the longevity and keeping them healthy. But what I really enjoy is developing that young mind. You know, I try to always put myself into the horse's shoes, to where I have a pretty good idea what I want them to do, but I cannot expect them to know it, because they have no idea. So you're starting all over again basically every year with these young horses. And I enjoy the process on the young horses. I spend as much time as I can when I'm home on my young prospect. A lot of two-year-olds, I spend probably, of all the trainers that are showing, I would think that I spend, you know, most of the time or a lot more time than some of those other guys, because I really truly enjoy it. I enjoy getting to know a horse. I enjoy learning how their mind works, and pretty soon they tell you if they have the right mind. Like I said, talent-wise, physically, most of my horses can be reiners, but there's a lot of them that will tell you, can I be a young reiner? Can I be a futurity horse? Or am I going to be more of a derby horse? And that just becomes something that you're going to find out with experience. Basically, you know, a horse will tell me how much they can handle. I only want to train a horse that has a mind ready to be trained on, that it's an open mind, it's relaxed, and it's ready to absorb. Because I've learned from experience that if you don't have that kind of mind, they're not going to retain anything. So basically you're kind of wasting your time and their energy every day by teaching them something that they're not going to retain. So some horses retain for 5%. It's no different than young children. Some their attention span changes a lot from individual to individual. So I try to surround myself and fill up my barn with horses that have a mind that's very mature early on, that it's open to learning, and they really enjoy that relationship with the rider. And then the talent comes out by itself. Obviously, you know, you can have a horse that will mark a 75 and one that marks a 73, but to me that really doesn't matter that much. I can train a horse that has a little bit less natural talent but has a great mind. And by the great mind is what I was just saying. Basically a mind that's always asking the rider, what do you want me to do? Let's work together. And that gives you a horse that you can trust in the show pen, because it's what they want to do from your relationship. And it's not something you just taught him to do, but then his mind wanders off to other places.
Andrea, I was also incredibly spoiled and got to be there in Cremona to watch your win on Haas. And that was magical, actually. I really enjoyed it. But you have had so many other amazing runs this year, amazing horses. Tell us a little bit about 007. Tell us a little bit about Magnum's Custom Dream. Are there others that you want to mention and call out to their owners? I just think you've had such a fantastic year so far, and it's nowhere near over. So go ahead and share a little bit about those others, please, as well.
Yeah, it's been a special year so far, and I knew it coming into it. I was talking to Tish, my wife, at the beginning, actually at the end of last year. I was still doing some cow horse that I've been doing for the last few years, and I told her that going in 2025, I wanted to just concentrate on reining for 2025, because I had a special group of horses, and especially a special group of futurity horses for this year. I had been riding them early on as two-year-olds, and I told Tish early on, I said, I don't think I have I've had a solid of a group as I have this year, so I really want to give them as much time as I can. And basically, yeah, I mean, I was super excited about my futurity horses, and then not really planned there have been a few derby horses that I kind of came into the program and gave even a boost of the derby horses. So early on in the year, this year, right after the qualifier, I've had Rhodes River Ranch Trashing Your Dreams. It's a horse that's seven. It's on his last Derby year, and I've been admiring that horse for a long time. And I asked Sean McBurney that runs that program. I say, if I ever have a shot of showing that horse for you, I'd love it. And he didn't get himself qualified for the Run for the Million. And he told me, listen, it's his last NRBC and Derby for this horse. I would love for you to give it a try. And even if we didn't have much time, I really clicked on him right away. And it's been a lot of fun. It's a horse that I've only shown four times, but it keeps growing and growing. And we had a 230 there in Tulsa, and it's been a super fun horse to have. And then the couple other ones you mentioned, Magnum Custom Dreams, that's another horse that Casey Hinton showed his whole career. He's 8 years old this year. And Casey told me last year, said, I'm done with him. I'd love to qualify myself one more time for the Run for the Million. But even if I qualify with him, I'd love for you to give it a shot and try him after that. And that speaks volumes for a trainer like Casey and an owner that, you know, he did come to the Cactus, qualified himself in a very well position with that horse. And I thought that there was no way that I would get that horse after that. But then he decided to leave him with me and say, hey, if you get along with him and you guys are a good match, go ahead and show him. So we took him to the Run for the Million. We were really close to winning it. And that was really the first time I showed him. I showed him one time at the American, and we had a little mishap to where I marked a zero because I couldn't shut him off in a turn in time. So I walked out of the pen without really trying the horse any circles or any stops. So going to the Run for the Million was kind of scary, but exciting at the same time because I knew he was capable of marking big scores, but I'd never had put it together with him. So it was a challenge at the same time, but also, you know, something I really enjoyed, and we came up short, but it was a great experience marking in 230. And then the other horse, like you mentioned, just here the last couple of weeks, that's been pretty special. It's 007. And that's another story that I never planned on at the beginning of the year. My son Luca had him in training after Gabriel Borges showed him, moved to Texas. The owners, Mike and Sandy Vargo, wanted to keep him in Arizona because that's where they live. They gave him to Luca. He made the finals at the NRBC, but he looked at me and said he thought that maybe he wasn't the best match for the horse. He felt that, you know, maybe they weren't on the exact same page, and he offered it to me. We work out of the same facility. Luca's working out of my ranch, and he's got his independent business, but we obviously ride with each other every day, and he's like, Dad, why don't you give him a try? And I fell in love with that horse pretty much from the beginning. It's a horse that, even without going and showing him, I knew that we were a good match, and we decided to show him. I was really close to showing him for the Run for the Million, but because I had never taken him anywhere, I told the owners that I would take him to the shootout as a first outing. We want that with a 234, and he was great there. I mean, obviously, I didn't get to school him or do anything. I had only been riding him since the Derby and after the Derby, basically. And so after a month, I went and showed him there. And then they asked me what I wanted to do with him. And I said, well, I'd love to save him for next year. But to be honest, just having one run and one show, it's not enough for me to get to know the horse. So I'd love to show him one more time this year before we finish with him. And so we decided to take him to 100X. And, you know, he's a little horse with a lot of power and a lot of ability, but he's got a great mind also. And that's kind of what I found out at the 100X, because there's just not that many horses for people that maybe are new to reining. You know, they think that, you know, you get one of the best riders like myself and a very successful horse, and you can pull out 230s no problem. But it's not as easy as it seems, meaning that, yeah, you may be able to get one run out of in the 230s, but it takes an exceptional horse to come back a week later and do it again. Usually we have a month, 2 months in between some of those runs, and we can let the horses just, you know, chill out, get a break, and then hemp him back up to bring him to that level. To be able to keep a horse at that level and be consistent to where he came back and marked pretty much the same exact score with a 233.5, it's pretty special. So for me, it just gives me even more incentives to keep going. And because I sometimes when you've done it for years after years, and you wonder, you know, when is enough? When you just keep asking yourself, you know, the older you get in your career, you're asking, is it enough? Is it not enough? But then you get a horse like 007 that tells you, well, obviously there's a reason why I keep doing this, because I love it. And you know, I haven't reached myself, I don't think I've reached my potential as a horseman, as a trainer yet. I keep learning from these horses, and these horses keep getting so much better that it just gives you that push to keep going, because you never know who's the next one that's going to come in the barn. So, yeah, I mean, obviously the owners are amazing because they give me the trust to basically kind of line out the career of these horses, and that speaks volumes for, you know, obviously what the trust that they have in our program. And every horse is different. Just like I said, on a horse like 007. He's six coming seven next year. He'll be his last year as Derby horse. So I really want to concentrate on the big ones for next year, you know, but some younger horses, I show more just because they need to develop. There's a couple of Derby horses that I showed earlier this year that I felt they needed to go to the show pen more and more just to get more experience. So, you know, every horse is different, and having the customers behind it and the owners of these horses that give you the freedom to develop these horses, it's crucial to be successful, I think.
Wow. That was awesome, Andrea. Thank you for talking us through that, because there's so many good points you hit on that a lot of folks who are not, maybe not in the reining world, or maybe they are and they don't realize, you just hit on. I marked some words down as you were talking because I think they're key words. You were talking about collaboration between trainers. I think that's something that's, I don't know if it's unique to reining, but it's definitely something special about our sport. You talked about mentality of the horse. You talked about learning ability, and you talked about making sure the correct matching between horse and trainer. You talked about having support from the owners to making sure the horse was happy in his job, not just training him, but having him enjoy the job. I could go on and on, honestly, but I won't, because you talked through it all really well. And
even to add to it, you know, we like, for example, let's use 007. He's a horse that a lot of people are asking to breed mares to. So, you know, the trainers, the owners, the vet that's going to collect him, we all work together to try to do the right thing for the horse and, you know, try to be successful at everything. It's kind of hard. So you're always trying to navigate that. So as a trainer, you can't concentrate on just your training. You got to really have an open mind to everything. So Sandy, the owner, Vargo, asked me, okay, we have a lot of requests. We got to put into quarantine for 60 days to approve the semen to go to Europe, Australia, and Mexico. How do we do that? So you come up with a plan. I was talking to Roger that owns the facility where he's going to get collected. We tried to come up with an exercise plan for the horse while he's in quarantine. So he's going to swim three times a week. He's getting collected. Then they're going to freeze semen. So I'm going to get him back probably by the end of the year. And then you make a plan on that. So you can't just forget about the horse and then expect him to come back and be exactly where he was, because physically he's not going to be if you don't really have an exercise plan. And even mentally, like a lot of these stallions that are still showing and they're getting collected, it's very challenging for them because you're asking them on one day to get collected. They've got to be as, you know, we call them study, but basically show as much testosterone as they can. They need to have all that libido so that their semen count and their sperm count is really high. And then the next day you're asking them to be as docile as they need to be and in training and all that. So, you know, we have techniques that work for everything. Like I never collect my stallions on my ranch. I want them to know the difference that when they go to a stallion station, they can be that type of horse. And then when they come back, they need to come back to the training facility. And most of the horses, they understand that difference after a few times that you do it. They understand. I never have the same person that's going to groom them for me to go train, go in the stall when they go to the stallion station. There's always a different person that usually never touches them when they're coming into training so that they learn the difference between one person and the other. So there's a lot of different things that play a role in to be successful. It's not just about talent and it's not just about, you know, how good the horse is. It's definitely the work of a group of people that most of the time don't get recognized, because the person that gets recognized, it's always the rider. But I think that there's definitely always, when you look at the successful combination of horse and rider, there's usually another four, five, six, if not more people behind it, between the guys that groom and the guys that take care of him, the veterinarian, the horseshoers. There's so many people that are playing a huge role in it.
So true. So true. It takes a village, as they say, to make something that incredible happen. And I love you give credit to your team, because it does. It takes a village. It's not just the trainer. It's not just the horse. It's everyone that's behind them, helping them get to that moment. And so many good things that you just mentioned. And I love that our listeners are getting the chance to hear this from you, because you are our highest $1 million rider. Obviously, you've shown us through this podcast, you've shown us how much work and time it takes to get to that level. It's dedication, but it's also having the support of a village behind you, making it happen. Some of our listeners may be interested in getting started in reining. Do you have any advice for them on where they should go to source a trainer, or do you have a program to help those folks get started?
Yeah, I mean, I do a lot of consulting, so they can definitely reach out to me, and I know a lot of other top trainers do it. I always say, go to the person that you look up. It doesn't matter if you're wanting to learn to train, or if you're just wanting to own a horse, or if you're wanting to just be involved in the industry in some other role. But if you look up to a person, or you see a program that from the outside looking in looks like something you would love to be part of one day, go and talk to that person, because we're always very open to help people coming into the industry. We're not, you know, sometimes the best time, it's not during the horse shows just because we're so busy. But I think that if everybody now has either a website or contact, so if you contact us in between horse shows, we're more than open to give you suggestions. You know, for people just like myself, I've had so many people that have come into the program, different trainers that, you know, maybe do concentrate on different part of the business. I only concentrate on open horses, and I don't coach very many non-pros anymore, and I only concentrate on level four horses. But I've had so many assistant trainers that are in different part of the industry, so I can push people or suggest, give them suggestions or where to go as far as where you want to be. Do you want to be an amateur? Do you want to have your son start in the youth classes? Do you want to own a horse? And usually there's always a place for somebody. So I think the best advice is to talk to people that have been in the industry for a long time, because they're going to have the context and the knowledge. And I think that, you know, from there, you just decide where you fit in the best. But there's always a stepping ladder. I think that people sometimes get a little bit discouraged when they maybe go to the reigning futurity, they buy a yearling prospect, and they're going to hope that it's going to make the open futurity finals. I think that there's ways to get in to where you're going to learn more about the business. And really, it's not about just going and showing. It's the love of the horse. If you enjoy the process, it's going to be something that you're going to love forever. If you're just coming in with the expectations to go in and have a great horse to go win, sometimes you get disappointed. Because even myself and the type of horses and owners that I have, there's a lot of times that most of the times it doesn't work compared to the times that you're going to go win. So we do it because we love it, and we do it because we love our horses and the process. And then, you know, if you win one day, it's a cherry on top, but it's not why we do it.
Andrea, how can folks find out more about you and your program? What is some social media, website? How do they find you?
Yeah, I'm on pretty much every platform, from Facebook under Fapani Performance Horses, or fapaniperformance.com is my website. And yeah, you're going to find most of the information there. I do have a podcast called Along for the Ride. If you want to learn about some other trainers and some other people that are involved in the industry, I've done quite a few interviews with very successful people. So I've had a lot of people reaching out to me that didn't know much about the sport or the industry, and they learned a lot just from listening to those. So those are some of the information, and also my personal contacts are all available on those platforms. So feel free to reach out to us.
Thank you so much for being on the show today. It was an absolute pleasure to have you on.
Well, thank you guys for having me. So hopefully we can do it again sometime soon.
Yes, definitely. Thank you.
So I'm just saying, I love learning how people start, and I love trail ride and pony. That is wonderful. And I also loved how Andrea said, and yeah, my dad got me into it to keep me out of trouble. Because I'm not going to lie, my parents got me into horses to keep me out of trouble. So there was that. So, wow. I mean, all of us have to start somewhere, and not everyone starts from a big family ranch and it's just passed down from generation to generation. Many, like our two professionals on today, started with just that very first ride where they just got hooked.
Absolutely. And I have to add, both of them mentioned the importance of rest in between runs and letting them be horses and, you know, really giving them the opportunity to do their best in the arena. And I love that. I love that they are so invested in their horses and their mentality. And it's, for me, that was just the really, really important note. So find our podcast on nrha.com/podcast. Now go out and have the slide of your life.